Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Did this move? This looks like it moved.
Yeah.
Because normally I can't.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That doesn't matter.
Here, let me move it over here. There, that's all it is. That's all it is.
Now it looks really weird. Like, it looks like a weird little dick, like, coming out. Like, coming down into the frame.
You know all about it.
Yeah. Dick coming down into the frame.
So, we're going to do Mommy Dearest.
Yeah.
This is a pretty good movie.
You had never seen it before.
No, I've never
seen
it.
And you didn't realize, I don't think that you realized the extent to the way this movie has saturated the cultural zeitgeist.
No.
Even nowadays, there are people, I think a lot of it is not just because it's become sort of like a camp classic, like an unintentional comedy in a lot of ways. I kind of feel like particularly the drag community have really made this an enduring, because I honestly don't think there has been a single season of RuPaul's Drag Race that didn't have at least one contestant that did some shit from this.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, it's a big thing. It's a big deal.
It's a fucking weird movie. I understand it though. You know what I mean? It's like, in the abusive ass mom. Fucking.
Yeah.
And she's kind of a fading star. And she starts adopting children. They only talk about the two that she adopted, but she actually adopted... Jenny says later on she adopted two more. They're not in this.
Yeah, they didn't even mention that.
Right. So, and this started like back in the 50s that she started to adopt them. So this was kind of like... Celebrities ended up doing this shit. They still do it. Adopting a bunch of children. And they just kind of... And they do it for fucking publicity, really. It's fucking hardcore. Fucking, it's quite a movie. Quite a movie. Fucking Jesus.
It is.
Now this is this is according to the daughter, the adopted daughter.
Yeah, Christina.
Some people corroborate what she says, but yeah, I don't doubt it. I do not doubt it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I kind of feel like a lot of people, her book came out in 1978, which was a year after her mom, Joan Crawford, died. And I think this was kind of, I think there had been one or two previous, but this was kind of the first real high-profile celebrity kid tell-all that was kind of saying, you know, this goddess of golden era Hollywood was actually not what she appeared to be. And so I think that Christina got a little bit raked over the coals. I don't think the same thing would happen nowadays, because I think people have a lot more of an understanding of child abuse and stuff, but I think she kind of got like shit on a lot, and a lot of Joan Crawford's friends, like people that knew her, came out and said, oh, that wasn't the Joan I knew and stuff like that. I'm like, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that
it wasn't happening.
Right, yeah. That doesn't mean it wasn't happening, because like, yeah, she might have been like showing, you know, she was an actress, she might have been showing like, you know, a good face to all these other people, and then getting home and beating the crap out of her kids.
Yeah, from what I can see, the character that we're given in this movie, she's kind of OCD and has like a narcissistic personality disorder and borderline personality disorder. She's a fucking trip, and does weird shit, like give kids presents in front of the cameras and everything. And then ask the kid, well, what's your favorite one? And they're like, okay, this one. Like, okay, well, then all the rest of them are given to the poor. Fucking, that's the same as giving kids a present and taking it back.
Yeah.
If you want to give kids to the poor, if you want to give presents to the poor kids, you give presents to the poor kids.
Yeah. Don't give them to your kid and then go,
take
psych!
Them away and give them to the poor. Yeah, right. Ridiculous.
You can't really have them.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
She was doing that kind of shit in front of, like, boyfriends and stuff. And it's an interesting story. And then she gets paranoid. She thinks the little daughter's making fun of her, you know, when that's not what it was. You know, she was just playing, pretending to be her and stuff. You know, it's just
yeah, she's like accepting an award, you know.
Kind of a depressing movie, you know. It's like, damn, you know, that fucking girl had to go through all that shit, you know.
And it was mostly bullshit.
It was mostly bullshit. It didn't mean anything. It's just that this bitch was a psycho.
The interesting thing, I haven't read the book this was based on, but from the, you know, research that I did, now Christina Crawford herself, who I believe is still alive, she actually came out after the movie came out, because she was really excited. Like, her husband at the time was actually one of the producers on the film, but when she saw the final film, she didn't love it. She said that it was grotesque.
Yeah.
She kind of thought, well, and see, the thing about this film actually has a fascinating, like, production history. Initially, I think, Franco Zeffirelli? Franco's his first name, right? The Italian director, he was actually supposed to make this movie at first, and actually Anne Bancroft was going to be in the Joan Crawford role, and it was actually supposed to be a very serious kind of exploration of the abuse, like the relationship between the mom and the daughter. But as it went through several iterations of the script, and they got a new director, and they got Faye Dunaway in there to stuff like that, it's almost kind of, it seemed like Faye Dunaway's then boyfriend, who they later married, and Christina Crawford's husband were both producers on it. And it's almost like they were kind of one of them was kind of like, no, we need to make Joan worse, like more monstrous. And the other one was like, no, we need to like make her more human a little bit. And it seems like the movie almost focused more on Joan and her like glamour and craziness rather than the actual kid and the abuse. Yeah. I think that was what Christina's criticism mainly was. She's like, she thought that they maybe made Joan like a little bit too sympathetic by focusing more on her and her problems instead of focusing more on the kid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's not really physical abuse, it's like emotional abuse.
I mean, yeah, some of it is. Like she
cuts her hair off one time when she was a little kid, but we don't have the full story on that. I mean,
she did try to strangle her when she was older.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and she did like beat her with the wire hanger.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
But according to this story, that wasn't habitual. It's not like she's getting burned with fucking irons and fucking some of the shit that tearing people's eyes out. Like, that happens too in abuse, some abuse case. You ever heard of that one?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That dude fucking tore that girl's eyes out. She was only like 16. That was some weird shit.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's, you know, it's not like the fucking, you know, abuse Olympics. It's like, you know what I mean? It's bad, like, whenever it happens. Right. But I kind of feel like, because Christina was saying that some of the stuff in the film was exaggerated, but some of it wasn't bad enough. Like, some of it they pulled back on to make Joan look not as bad.
Yeah.
Or at least to give the audience, like, an understanding of where she was coming from.
She thought everything was dirty.
Yeah, that was some
OCD. Shit weird. She's like, no, it's not dirty. Fucking just, she was losing it because she was losing her career.
DJ Maniac says, I don't remember. Do they mention Pepsi even once in Mommy Dearest?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Toward the end of the film, she actually married, what was his name? Alfred Steele. He was the CEO of PepsiCo at the time.
Yeah.
And, they did marry, although he's in it for like 2 minutes and then like he's in like a scene and then he drops dead. But, so they do kind of say that, and they have that scene where she's, at the board, like after he dies, and they were like, well, we thought maybe since, you know, you're a widow now, like you wouldn't want to be on the board anymore. And she's like, oh, I absolutely want to be on the board. Don't fuck with me, fellas. Yeah, she like gets up. I get to totally understand why drag queens love this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, her and Faye Dunaway, she has gone on record. I have to say, I kind of wish that Faye Dunaway had a little bit of a better sense of humor about the way that this movie was received. I think they thought when they were making it that it was this very, very serious movie, but because it was so over the top and like overwrought, it almost became, and this even happened at the time. This came out in 1981, and when they first put the like put the posters out for like the marketing and stuff, it just basically had, you know, a portrait, like a very old Hollywood portrait of Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford on there. But as soon as they heard that audiences were going to see it like Rocky Horror style, like especially like gay audiences stuff, and they were just like laughing their asses off at it and thinking it was awesome, like, and hilarious, they switched the marketing to focus on, so now they have like a poster that says no wire hangers ever, and it has like this like fucking, and then it says the biggest mother of them all and stuff like that. So they leaned into the marketing at the time once they learned that that's how people were receiving it. And it's like, it's kind of fucked up because there's actually like a couple of really good kind of long like examinations of this movie and like the cultural impact that it had. And it is kind of like fucked up to think that this is a movie that's based on a real memoir about real child abuse, and it's like, do you feel kind of like yucky about laughing about it, but I mean, it's hard not to, but I do. I love this movie. It's not guilty pleasure or anything like that. I just really, really like this movie. I've seen it like a bunch of times. I saw it on cable back in the day so many times, and I hadn't seen it for several years, and Tom had never seen it. And you didn't really like know, as I said, like what cultural impact this movie had. Like I said, even people, even fucking Gen Z and stuff like that, you say no wire hangers, everybody knows what that is. Even if they haven't seen the movie, they might not have seen the entire movie or even know who Joan Crawford was, like that she was a real person, but everybody knows that cultural reference. So you have to say Faye Dunaway, she was not happy with how the movie came out or how the movie was received. And I think that she, because she's a method actor, right? And she got really, really, really into this role. I saw like part of an interview with her, and she said that it took her like 2 months to get back out of being Joan Crawford. And the thing about it, I think that people thought she seemed to relate to Joan Crawford, like the person. And she seemed to think that her and Joan were kind of like similar personality types. So I think when people started seeing her as this like over the top caricature of Joan, I think she kind of got offended by that. And this it didn't ruin her career because she still worked afterward. But, prior to this coming out, she had like won an Oscar for Network. She was in, she was in fucking tons of movies, and she was like this big star. And after this, she kind of like did more indie stuff because nobody really was. She got like Razzies and all that kind of stuff. And this movie did too. So
they were insulted.
Yeah, I guess it's just.
I think the movie is a downer a bit.
It is. So, it's. I mean, it's a depressing topic.
So people pay money to see movies in a theater for escapism most of the time, almost all the time. Or the only reason you would ever want to go and pay money to go see this would be like kind of like a horror movie experience. But this is not a horror movie. It wasn't really marketed as one. Although you said they had changed the marketing to make it a horror movie type experience, that would make more sense.
Like they marketed it more like a comedy.
Like a comedy?
Like an unintentional comedy.
Yeah, okay.
Like a camp kind of.
That's what they
did.
Well,
John Waters, after he saw this movie, he said, "This might be the first movie that I've actually seen like a woman playing a drag queen."
Yeah. Yeah, which of course you have to realize that narrows the target audience down very, very narrow. Okay. So I don't think the movie's that much of a financial failure.
It was a modest financial success. It was a critical failure.
Okay.
More than anything.
I would have kind of probably marketed it as a horror movie.
And honestly, I was watching a couple documentaries about this, and some of the comments on YouTube underneath were like, a lot of people think this is like an unintentional comedy, but it's like if you grew up in an abusive household, then this is absolutely a horror movie because. You know, the thing about it is that her character is very over the top. I mean, some of the situations are ridiculous.
Don't water on you.
Don't do that. Okay. Some of the situations are ridiculous, but if you were a little kid and you were dealing with that, that would absolutely be the most horrifying shit ever. Can you imagine, like, living with a mom that just, like, went fucking batshit on you all the time?
Yeah.
I know you can.
Yeah.
But yeah, just that whole thing where she was like, where she got fired from MGM and she's like, then she wakes the kids up in the middle of the night and then goes and like cutting down all their roses. Yeah. Tina, bring me the axe. You know what I mean? It's like, it's fantastic. I fucking love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I honestly really like the overacting in this. And honestly, to me, the abuse scenes, while they are over the top and kind of ridiculous in a way, I also find them very affecting. Like the one scene, where it's kind of like the first really bad thing where, like you said, she's in front of Joan's mirror, like playing with her makeup and like pretending to be her. She's not mocking her, really. She's just playing. She's just like, oh, I'd like to accept this award, blah, blah. She's just like being like
her
mom.
She's role playing as her.
Yeah, like a lot of little girls do. Yeah. And her mom just, like, flips the fuck out and starts, like, chopping her hair off. And this scene just goes on, and the kid is just, like, screaming her fucking head off. Yeah. And it's just, at that point, like, Tom was like, I don't think I can watch this movie.
Yeah. Like, this is here, man.
This is fucked up.
Leave that fucking kid alone.
I know. Yeah. It's, like, fucking... Tyler says, Dunaway gets too much grief for this movie. She was hired to play a crazy person, and holy shit, did she deliver.
Yeah.
People like this exist. That's what I'm saying. So, to me, even though I can see... you know, where, you know, the camp thing comes from, because it absolutely does have that, and you can make a, you know, make a thing that a lot of the lines are, like, very over the top and very funny, but there are people like this in real life, and like I said, if you had to deal with a person like this as a kid, then it would absolutely not be funny to you in the slightest.
I can attest.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. You know, I have a normal mom, so it's just kind of like, maybe it's my own privilege that I didn't have to grow up, so to me, I can see that it's funny, but I can also see that it absolutely wouldn't be funny if you had grown up with a mom like that. So, in case you don't know, if you've never seen Mommy Dearest, it's funny. I was just watching this girl who did it was an hour and a half like video about watching this movie. She watches like a lot of camp type of movies, like Showgirls and stuff, like unintentional camp classics. And she said when she watched the movie first, she's young. She didn't know that Joan Crawford was a real person, that this was like a biopic. And she's like, but so many people recommended it to her that she went and watched it and she couldn't believe like how fucking ridiculous it was. And then she went back and researched it and she was like, holy shit, this is like a real person. And she's like, in some ways that kind of made it more horrible, but in some ways it kind of made it funnier. Like, because she did, like, this deep dive and, like, researched all about Joan Crawford and about the background of how this movie got made and all this other kind of stuff. But, yeah, so it's kind of like, yeah, here's something weird. I don't know why they didn't mention this, because, honestly, I had forgotten all about this. In real life, you know, mostly this kind of sticks. The thing about this movie that's very weird, and it's long. I had forgotten how long this movie was. It's almost 3 hours. And just 2 hours, 45 minutes, something like that. It doesn't seem that long to me, I guess, because I've seen it so many times, but it's almost kind of like, it doesn't really have, I don't want to say it doesn't have a plot, it's just kind of like episodic in the sense that it's almost kind of like, this is going to sound fucked up when I say it, it's like the abuse, like greatest hits, you know what I mean? Like it is, well, yeah, and I said it's going to sound fucked up when I say it. And it sounds even more fucked up now that I said it out loud. But, you know, because it basically just jumps ahead through years. And it doesn't really tell you, like, how much time is passing. You just kind of have to, like, use context clues.
I just saw it as, like, a docudrama.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. But like I said, it doesn't really have, like, a through line necessarily other than Joan Crawford has issues.
Yeah, it just shows how those issues fucking evolved over the years.
Right.
As she aged and how she... She was the kind of woman that was constantly trying to put herself at the center of everything, but which that worked when she was a teenager, when she was real hot. But by the time she's fucking 50, Hollywood's getting rid of her. They can't make money off her. She's too expensive to hire, and she doesn't bring in money like she used to, so they just start getting rid of her. And that's a huge blow to her ego, trying to stay important and what she thinks important is, you know? And in those days, they just didn't make movies where... older female roles were leads in the movie. You know what I mean? So there's nothing for her to do in that business. And it just shows how bitch was fucking desperate when her daughter got hurt, had to go to the hospital and couldn't work at her soap opera job. She stands in and plays her role. She's supposed to be a 24-year-old girl. She's 60-something years old. Look at old hag. Trying to play the fucking love interest and shit. This on a damn live television show that she couldn't handle because she didn't know the back plots, didn't know the back stories because she hadn't been on it for years, couldn't remember her lines, and man, that would have been mortifying.
I had forgotten about that scene. Like, when it got to that scene.
With that idea. Yeah.
When it got to that scene, because there's one part, like, toward when Christina is, like, an adult.
Yeah.
And she kind of goes out on her own. She wants to be an actress as well. Her mom absolutely will not help her because she's basically like, hey, I made it on my own, so can you. I don't want you to be spoiled or anything like that. So Christina is just, like, working as a waitress and, like, you know, going on auditions. And she lives in kind of, like, a dumpy apartment. But she gets a job on this soap opera. And you know, there's a scene where she's like starts like she's obviously in pain. She had like an ovarian tumor, so that had to get removed. And so and this is absolutely true. So she had to go to the hospital. And I don't know whose idea it was, but when she's at in the movie, you know, Joan goes to the hospital to see her. And the soap opera's producer is there. And Joan says, hey, well, was Joan's idea, right? Like, I'll fill in for her.
I guess so.
I'll fill in for her.
Yeah.
Even though in the movie, obviously, Faye Dunaway was only 40-ish, maybe. Yeah. I think she was 40 when she shot this. In real life, it was actually even more mortifying, like you said, because Joan Crawford in real life was 60-something. And the character, I think in the movie, she says, my character's only supposed to be 28 years old. It's actually worse than that. Her character was actually 24 years old, at least according to Wikipedia. Because I was curious about, I was like, did that really happen like that? And apparently it kind of did. Joan Crawford was on the show. It's called The Secret Storm. I don't think they mentioned that in the movie, but that's what the soap opera was called. And she was on there for 4 days. And I don't think any tapes of the actual episodes exist, but I have seen stills from it, and it looks even more horrifying than you could imagine. I mean, it's not that old ladies are inherently horrifying, but it just seemed like she's playing a 24-year-old character, and she's clearly in her 60s and a little bit of a rough-looking 60s.
Yeah. So and black and white on a fucking television screen would look terrible.
I mean,
yeah.
So
it'd be hard to light somebody.
So I don't know.
To get them to look like a young person. You just can't do it.
You just have to like spear Vaseline on the lens or something like that. Right. But see, I don't know. Like in the movie, they made it seem like it was Joan's idea, which kind of leads you to the question, like, why would they go along with that in a million years?
Right.
According to the Wikipedia thing, it didn't really say. It just said Joan filled in for it. It didn't say whose idea it was.
Because it was a live show. You could write a character out of a fucking soap opera for 4 days.
I can't imagine if it was the producer's idea.
Yeah.
Or even if it was Joan's idea, like, why would they go along with that? Because it's just kind of like, what, did they think it would be funny, or did they think it was, like, a lark, or it would be, like, a gimmick, or... I can't really think of any reason why they would do that.
Go watch Dark Shadows if that shit's still on Netflix. Dark Shadows doesn't make any sense, really. You could fucking jump in anywhere. If you watch fucking 10 episodes back-to-back, there's almost no story progression. You could jump in at any place, and really nothing's happened. It's drivel.
Well, I think that's kind of one of the things that people liked, or that was one of the things that they tried to, like, especially those really, really long-running soap operas.
Nothing happened.
I think they kind of wanted it to be, like, be sort of cyclical, so that even if you came in at any point, you wouldn't be too horribly lost. Yeah. You could, like, keep up with whatever the story was.
No story progression, really.
But
there might be a little bit of progression in between seasons, but not between episodes.
Yeah. Now, Swifty 1969, I saw a documentary somewhere, maybe YouTube, that the book was all made up by Christina to make money. See, I mean, I don't really know.
Sounds plausible to me.
I mean, I wasn't there. Now, as I mentioned earlier, they don't mention this in the movie, but Christina and Christopher were not the only two kids that Joan Crawford adopted. She actually adopted twin girls a little bit later on. I was looking at the picture. I don't remember what year it was when she adopted them, but it looked like Christina was probably 12 or 13, something like that, maybe a little bit older, when she adopted these other two kids. Now, they don't mention this in the movie, but I think they probably should have, because one of the things about, you know, the thing with the will at the end where, you know, basically she's like, I'm not leaving Christina and Christopher anything. Mm-hmm. One of the things, which is true, and the quote that they had from the will that they said, that's absolutely what her will said, so they didn't make that up. But the other two girls that were younger, they got, I think it was $77,000 each in the will. So it seemed like even more of a dick move that she didn't leave the other two kids anything, because she left those two, the two younger girls, something. So there might have been something going on. Now, the two younger girls, as far as I know, have come out and said, well, you know, mom didn't abuse us, or it wasn't like that. Like I said, that doesn't necessarily
mean that it didn't happen.
Mean that it didn't happen to that one. It might have happened to that one kid and, like, not the other ones. You know what I mean? And there had been several years you know, I don't remember how many years it was between the time that she adopted Christina, but Christina was, you know, a little bit older. She wasn't like a little kid.
A lot of it has to do with point of view, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all of it would have to do with point of view. Maybe it happened before the new kids showed up, and they just didn't have the background or the understanding to know what was going on.
That's what I'm saying. So it's, I really, really hesitate to question anybody's story of horrible abuse like that, because...
Well, it's, okay, horrible abuse makes you think that they're locking people up in cages or torturing or fucking...
Well, you know what I mean.
It's not really horrible. It's just standard emotional abuse, really, most of it, what they're talking about. Pretty standard in terms of the on how bad it can get if you fucking look into cases, you know. It's just that it was just kind of standard, and so I'd say it's very plausible that it did happen. You know, if she was saying shit that you couldn't be backed up, then you'd have to call bullshit on it. You know, like, you know, keeping her in the cage or starving her, or, you know, fucking beating her on a daily basis, black and blue. Then you'd have to have fucking evidence for that. There's no evidence for that. But her claims are not that outrageous.
That's no, why. Not really. That's the thing.
Claims are not that outrageous. That's why I'm going to say, yeah, that probably happened.
Yeah, because a lot of it, there was some physical abuse, and I guess apparently, like, Joan Crawford did have a problem with alcoholism and things like that. Yeah. So, but I think mostly it was psychological, emotional abuse, which, like I said, is kind of hard to prove.
Making her clean things that weren't dirty. Fucking, getting upset about the coat hangers. Fucking thinking, you know, becoming paranoid. Oh, you're making fun of me, you know.
Well, and just like constantly like fucking degrading her, in a way that, you know, making her give her presents away. The
and
whole thing, like that whole thing at the beginning, like with the swimming race and like, you know, her being bigger. She wouldn't let the little kid win.
Right.
She's
right.
Like, I'll always win because I'm bigger than you and I'm faster than you and life isn't fair. And stuff like that, which is true,
but your own way. So the claims are not real extraordinary claims.
Yeah,
it's just that the kids saw it as mean-spirited and it stuck with her. So, and this is how it was portrayed in the movie. Like, you know, she was a bitch.
Yeah,
she's a bitch. You know, which I'm gonna say okay. She probably was a bitch.
Like I said, that's not great. And most, even people that were friends with her and liked her, said she was a very... I mean, she did come from nothing. I mean, she was very, very poor. And she kind of made it to the top of the Hollywood heap pretty much through her own determination.
Yeah. Now, I liked her quotes about Hollywood that are in this movie. I like what she said about... She said fucking Hollywood was a fucking shitty town. Fucking shitty job. And... Yeah, she said that fucking she kept her mouth shut on all the damn fucking
the dirt that all she the had dirt on everybody.
That she had on everybody else, and all the scandals that they've been keeping under wraps. And she doesn't name any names or say what it is, but you know it's fucking sex and drugs and fucking betrayal and shit. And it's just like,
same as it always was.
And evidently that goes all the way back to the 20s. That it was bad then.
Well, Tyler says, I think this story is true. Hollywood is still fucked up, but old Hollywood was way fucked up. I mean, old Hollywood, they were like covering up fucking murders. They were doing all kind of fucking
Errol stuff. Flynn and shit with his 16-year-old girls and all the cocaine and fucking sex rooms.
So it's like people
His own, Errol Flynn had his own sex slave. He bought her.
Yeah.
From the parents.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about fucked up shit nowadays, but I think it was way worse.
She's like 14 or 15, bought a 14-year-old girl from
It was
parents.
Worse, and they were better at covering it up. They didn't find out about it until, like, much later.
Yeah.
Zach says, Tammy mentioned, too, not all children in a family get abused. Exactly. Yeah. Some abusers focus on one child. And I think the reason that, if this story happened the way that the book said, I think maybe the reason... And they kind of hint about this in the movie, too, where she goes after Christina because maybe she sees Christina as a rival a little bit, which definitely comes into play, like, later on. Once the little girl is, like, old enough to, when she mixes the drink for one of her uncles, like one of Joan's boyfriends, and then comes in and, like, looks at them kind of, like... interested, you know what I mean? And after that happens, Joan's like, oh, she's getting old enough to, like, be competition for me or something like that. So she sends her off to boarding school.
Maniac says, yeah, Dark Shadows is super slow. It takes 3 episodes for a character to move from one room to another. And then again, Camguy says, Dark Shadows was a daytime soap opera. You can leave them for years and come back and know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think people watch them for, like, you know, comfort sort of reasons. Like, yeah. It's just something you can come on. So, you know, it's...
Dark Shadows have been good if you'd have turned it into a miniseries. Not a soap opera, but a miniseries.
Yeah.
Where things actually happened in it. Things kind of happened in Dark Shadows, but like you said, that first season could have been condensed into about 4 episodes.
You know? Maybe not even that.
It's
like, let's just make it one movie and one and done. There we go.
So you could take 4 years of that and turn it into a 3-hour movie. 2.5-hour movie. Yeah.
Zach says, I'm really impressed how people have come around on this movie and Faye's performance. She was always a favorite actress of mine, and I think her and the little girl especially are excellent in this. I do too. Yes, it's over the top, but I don't know. It's just, it works for me.
This is very early 80s. The movie market of the day was very different back then than it is now. People back then didn't tolerate this kind of shit. They didn't want to see it. They just didn't want to see that kind of shit. I mean... It would have been better had you marketed this to be something kind of like along the lines of Exorcist. Then it probably would have sold, I think. It would have been a bigger hit. But just what they wanted late 70s, early 80s was fucking basically dumb cop shows. They weren't that dumb though either. Some, you know, Dirty Harry type shit that would make a lot of money. What else? If you could rip off Star Wars... Well, you couldn't rip off Star Wars. The Italians were ripping off Star Wars and fucking couldn't make any money on it. Star Wars... it's just... This wasn't going to be a big hit, if you ask me. There's no way to really cut this. It was just not going to be a big hit, I don't think.
I mean, the book...
It's about child abuse.
The book was a massive bestseller, which is why they wanted to make it into a movie, like, almost immediately. I think that the rights to this movie were bought even before the book came out. You know what I mean?
It's about child abuse, and that's not going to be a big seller.
The thing about it is I kind of feel like, even though I really like this movie, but I'm trying to, like, think about maybe what the critics were pissed off about, I think maybe one of the things they were pissed off about is that the movie couldn't really seem to decide if it wanted to be about, you know, the glamour of Joan Crawford or what that glamour was a mask for, I guess. Or if they wanted to focus more on the psychological stuff and focus more on the kid and the relationship between her and Christina. And, you know, did they want to focus more on the child abuse? It seems to me that they leaned more in the direction of focusing on Joan and her persona. And I think that the reason that this sort of became a camp classic, I guess, is because Faye Dunaway's portrayal, and I'm not criticizing because I actually really like it, but it can come across as caricature, and so you get the feeling that you don't ever get to know Joan Crawford. It's just because everything is facade. But then in some ways, maybe that's the point, is that maybe that's what she was like.
I think that's what it
was. Maybe nobody actually knew what she was really like because she was so good at maintaining this facade of perfection. And maybe that's kind of like the point of the movie. I mean, that's how I always kind of took it.
Well, look, she came from nothing.
Right.
She was built up in Hollywood. So that's totally artificial. So there wasn't much to her. There's, you know, it was just learned behavior. The boyfriend was saying that, stop acting with me. The camera's not on you.
And she's like, I'm not acting.
That's all she was.
But we were talking about that scene when that scene was going on, when she has the fight with her lawyer boyfriend when he breaks up with her. And, you know, the camera's not here now, stop acting. And she says, I'm not acting.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were saying to each other, you know, does she even know if she's acting anymore? Maybe there's nothing more to her than that. Or maybe she's acted for so long that she thinks that's the real person that she is, which actually I always kind of found that an interesting aspect of the character, which is why I always kind of liked this movie. You know what I'm saying?
Well, who's the guy that plays Hannibal Lecter? What's the guy's name again?
Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins. I saw an interview with Anthony Hopkins one time, and this is when he got pissed off and retired. He came back later, but, you know, I'm not acting anymore. But what he said, I think, is true. He says, you cannot be a good actor for very long. It drives you crazy. It's not mentally healthy. He says, you have to take breaks from this. And I think that's probably what was up with Joan Crawford. She made a living when she was young and hot as being an actress. All she did was play roles. She was rewarded for playing roles. That became her personality. Playing a role and you get rewarded. Playing a role and you manipulate people and you get rewarded. That's what she became. She didn't have any real life skills other than that. It's not like she was working in a shop dealing with the public. It's not like she was in a kitchen fucking deep frying fucking oysters and shit, putting them on a plate, and, you know, or no real life skills.
I mean, not that I know. I don't know that much about. Right. She did like live through the Depression and stuff, and apparently she had like
real tough.
She had like a real rough childhood.
Yeah.
You know, she was very like really poor, and I'm not talking about just like kind of half.
Yeah, but she
poor.
Was a kid though.
Yeah.
When that was happening.
Yeah.
So then, as an adult though, that's not the life that she had. Okay. The life that she had was living in luxury and manipulating people and getting paid for it. That's what an actor is, a professional liar basically.
Yeah. Well, and
putting
it's
on a show.
It's interesting
and
too.
She got very rewarded for that.
Yeah.
But like I said, that's not you. Those are roles that you're given.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. And it doesn't last very long,
right.
Especially for women in that era.
Right.
You know, once you start pushing 30, 40 years old, you're not going to get any roles anymore. And they do kind of go into that a little bit. I mean, yes, she won an Oscar for Mildred Pierce, but you know, after that, the roles start drying up. She's getting old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And she can't be like this beautiful starlet. As much as she tries, and they actually show her in the movie, like, you know, jogging alongside the fucking car, like her, you know, her housekeeper or whatever is like driving alongside. It's like doing that thing with her face where she sleeps with her face in that fucking sling. Like,
yeah.
It's presumably to, like, keep her jowls from falling or whatever.
Yeah.
And then she does that thing at the beginning where she's just, like, scrubbing and scrubbing and scrubbing.
Yeah.
And then, like, she's putting boiling water on her face and then putting, like, cold witch hazel and shit
trying
like that on her face. Like, trying to keep her
skin tight
and all this other kind of stuff.
I don't think those old movie stars like that had normal lives at all.
Oh, absolutely not.
And I don't think their minds were very normal. Now, some of those movie stars in the more recent era, you know, they said that, you know, some of them are like normal guys. Like, they say fucking Kurt Russell's normal. Another one that they say is normal is Harrison Ford. But Harrison Ford was a dude that you hired to come fix your cabinets, really. That, you know,
yeah, I mean, he had something of a regular life
right.
before
and
he got famous.
Just, I've heard interviews with people who know him mention about him, and they say that he's just so laid back and doesn't give a shit. He's kind of like Mr. Cool Guy, and the reason why he got Mr. Cool Guy and why he did well is because he could deliver on camera, but he didn't care. He didn't care about Hollywood, and that, for some reason that moved him up. I guess it made him more of an alpha. And they said he was very lazy, you know? Like, he could have been a director, but he was just too lazy. He didn't care.
I mean, directing does sound like a lot of work.
Yeah. But they just said he'd just get in. Yeah, well, you know, it's not that kind of a movie, kid. Just he didn't really take any of it seriously, but he just did a good job. So I guess he never felt like he had anything to lose because he was just having fun and didn't really care.
Well, that's maybe the best way to approach it. I mean, it kind of depends on the personality. I kind of feel like what happened, it's really weird, too, and especially because this movie has become such a touchstone, like, for particularly the drag community. I kind of feel like it's weird because it's almost like Joan Crawford, the actual person, and Faye Dunaway, the actress, have almost become, like, intertwined to a point where they can't really pull them apart anymore.
Yeah.
Because Faye Dunaway, like I said, she was in this movie, and she was, you know, pretty adamant, like, after it was received the way it was, she was, like, she always, like, regretted doing that movie, and she, you know, she's a method actor, like I said, so she got so into the role that it took her, like, a long time to get out of it. I mean, you really can't accuse her of half-assing it. She threw every fucking thing into this movie. I think that Was it about her that I read this quote where it's like she wasn't just chewing the scenery, but she walked in, started at the corner, and chewed up the scenery, everything, like actors and all, or something like that. There was like a really funny quote about it, like when it came out. But she committed to this shit so much so that like the whole no wire hanger scene where she's like throwing this no wire hanger, so, like throwing. They're like she lost her voice for a long time, like she fucked up her vocal cords and all this other kind of crap. And the one scene where she was strangling Christina, like when they have that big fucking fight in the living room, She almost like really did strangle her. She got like super into it. They had to, you know, the crew had to come and like pull her off because she had gotten so into the fucking shit. Yeah. And honestly, that's what everybody loves, the no wire hanger scene, which is great. And also I love the chopping off the roses and the Tina bring me the axe scene. That's also great. But honestly, I really like that confrontation at the end where that woman from Red Book is there, like doing a puff piece on her. And then Christina's home and says, you know, her mom says something like, well, she got expelled from school. And she's like, no, I didn't, which she actually didn't. And then she's like, wow, how dare you embarrass me in front of the thing. And then they have this like fucking screeching cat fight. And she's like, why can't you show me the respect that you would, you know, and she just like goes off on this big like fucking thing. And then Christina's like, because I'm not one of your fans. Yeah. And then they just have this big fucking, I fucking love that. It's just so overwrought. And I love it. It's funny because another review of this that I was looking at, like somebody mentioned in the comments, they said, you know, maybe to American audiences, this type of acting seems very like over the top or overwrought. But like in Central and South America, that's just normal.
Yeah.
So it's like, so that's what I mean. So they said it's like a telenovela. It's a, yeah. You know, so they, like, we didn't really see it as campy or funny or anything like that at all. It's just, it's, everything's very emotionally heightened.
No, it's in fucking Brazil. Girls acted like that.
That's what I'm saying. So it's, so a lot of, I just thought
I
it was.
I will kill you. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, got it on video.
Yeah.
Women come out with knives and shit, threatening some dude because I'm going to chop it off.
That, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, yeah, part of it's cultural context too, yeah. Like I said. Like to us.
If I see you looking at her again, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
I mean, to us, like to, largely to like American and British, yeah, audiences too, in a way where we tend to prefer acting that's a little more, at least nowadays, that's a little more naturalistic. I don't know. I kind of feel like, I think Zach was just saying that, yeah, he said, something I noticed with Joan Crawford's movies is early in her career, she gave subtle and kind of modern performances, and as she got older, her acting got crazy, more crazy and theatrical. Yeah, and it's, which is weird because that's kind of like the opposite to how the rest of Hollywood was going, because like, I feel like everything started out very stagey and theatrical and over the top, and then, you know, starting in like probably the 1960s, everything went into like a more like low key, naturalistic, you know, not so acting. You know what I'm saying?
Tyler says Harrison Ford is a failed actor turned a mediocre carpenter turned a massively successful actor.
Yeah. It just goes to show how life can do some crazy shit.
Yeah,
I've heard
it because he didn't care.
It might be.
He didn't feel like he had anything to lose. So.
I mean, I can see. I mean, I, you know, you've done acting, and I haven't. I don't think I'd be any good at it. I'm just really not good at, like, pretending to be somebody else. Some people are good at that, but
I wouldn't want to do it for a living.
Yeah, I can see how, I mean, depending on your personality type, yeah, I can see how that would, like, fuck you up after a while.
Yeah.
Especially if you throw yourself into roles, like Faye Dunaway did with this.
Yeah.
You know, so you hear stuff about like Christian Bale and people like that who get really into their roles. Yeah. And people like that, even though they give amazing performances a lot of the times, I think their mental health ultimately suffers.
Think about it. You're a professional pretender. You can pretend anything. You can do it on stage. You understand blocking and lighting. But that's all you can do. And you're pretending to be a person who can really do things. Which, that's the conundrum I think that fucking Tom Cruise got himself in. Oh, I'm just pretending to be a pilot and just pretending to be a guy who rides a motorcycle. I'm just pretending to be I really want to do it. So then, you know, he Scientology fucking pushed him into fucking actually doing it. Although they used him as an advertisement, they profited off him, but he don't give a shit. He's got his own cult now, basically. He's basically number two in Scientology, I think. Than just him and David Miscavige.
Riding their little motorcycles.
Riding their
together,
little motorcycles. The little mini-me's. The little mini-me's, yeah.
With their little tiny booties.
It's a short guy club. Short guy mafia.
Tammy says, whatever happened to Baby Jane, Crawford and Davis were absolutely amazing bitches. Maybe we should watch that tonight and talk about that tomorrow.
I don't want any more of
that. You don't want to watch any more of that kind of stuff?
Maybe like next month or something.
Maybe next month. Yeah. You've had enough.
You've had enough melodrama.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing about it, like I said, I almost feel bad kind of laughing because, yes, this is about child abuse. And I will say that you know, like I said, some of the scenes where the little girl's like getting her hair cut off or like getting beaten with the wire hanger and she's like screaming and stuff were actually like not funny, were actually like pretty disturbing. But some of the stuff I actually really liked. One of the scenes that I always remember really liking growing up, because not because I could relate to it necessarily, but the one where she's trying to make Christina eat that super rare steak.
Yeah.
And Christina doesn't want to eat it. She's like, it's got all the blood. It's got all the blood comes out when I push on it. And she's like, then don't push on it. Yeah. And it just like, I thought that was like so funny. Well, because I love really rare steak. So I would have eaten the shit out of that. But I just love how that was kind of like the first gauntlet thrown down in this like battle of wills between her and the kid. Cause the kid was absolutely not going to eat that fucking meat. And then she kept saying, well, put the plate in the fridge. And then she kept like giving it back to her, like at every meal until she actually ended up eating it. But she never did end up eating it though. She actually won that one. But yeah, so just like little shit like that. I really enjoy that as well. That kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, seriously, I kind of feel like everybody, like I said, even if you haven't seen Mommy Dearest, you've probably seen Mommy Dearest, or you know some shit about it. Because I feel like even now, scenes from this and memes and stuff are really, really popular. But so that's why I was kind of shocked that you had never seen it. Mm-mm. I'm kind of curious to read the book now, because I don't know. It's, as I said, Christina Crawford has said that some of the stuff in the movie was like too grotesque, like, or over the top, but then some of it wasn't quite as bad. And one thing that I did hear was the whole thing about Christina getting kind of expelled from the school, from the boarding school, or actually she wasn't expelled, she was, you know, pulled out by her mom. I heard that that whole thing was actually worse than what they showed in the movie, but I'm not sure what the details of it are. So I don't know. I'm kind of curious to read the book now. I don't want to say that I think the book is bullshit, because I'm sure it's not. Like you said, it's not like she was alleging that, you know, my mom cut off my fingers or anything like that. It was some physical abuse, but it was mostly
just being a bitch.
Yeah, it was mostly just like emotional manipulation, just emotional terrorism type thing. And just because the two younger kids didn't experience it, just because some of Joan's friends and stuff didn't know about it, that doesn't necessarily mean that it didn't happen. I wasn't there, so I don't know. But I don't know. I kind of feel like one of the things was that, you know, at the very end of the movie, like where they're, you know, after Joan Crawford dies in 1977, and her and Christopher at the will, reading the will, and it says, you know, I'm not giving you bitches anything. And, you know, Christopher says, he kind of like smirks and he's like, oh, well, that's mom, like always having the last word. And then Christina says, does she? Like, you know, implying, oh, I'm going to write the book about it. But Christina was kind of mad because she's like, you know, I had started writing the book like before my mom died. And in fact, she speculates that her mom, even though her and her mom had kind of reconciled, she thought before her mom died, her mom knew that she was writing a book about her childhood, and that might have been one of the reasons that she cut her out of her will. That's speculation on everyone's part, but as far as I could determine from listening to Christina, she's like, I thought when I was older, like before my mom died, I thought we had reconciled. So I was actually very surprised when I found that I had been cut out of the will and the two younger kids weren't. So, but she's like, I had started working on the book a year and a half prior to the mom dying, to Joan Crawford dying. That's at least as far as she says. Because the book actually came out less than a year, I think, after Joan Crawford died. But, yeah, so this movie is actually on Pluto for free. As I said, it's a commitment. It's pretty long. I had forgotten that it was, like, almost 3 hours. But we had a good time. We had some drinks. We had some potato chips, and we sat around watching it.
I was amazed by some of the shit that she did, but, you know, but I kind of agree with what Zach says. Zach's in there saying his only complaint with the movies. It was kind of his complaint with it is that it's kind of shit you see on a damn old soap opera, but it's set in a real glamorous kind of setting, which it is. It's set in glamorous settings, but it's just kind of trifling fucking soap opera bullshit. It is.
The way it's shot. It's not very artistically framed or shot.
That's not what he's talking about. He's saying that it's just kind of like the subject matter is just kind of like the subject matter out of a soap opera, kind of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's a melodrama, like
melodrama,
I said. It's
just
a melodrama.
Interpersonal relationships, just mom's a bitch.
And I mean, something Zach said earlier that I actually kind of agree with. He's like, I actually would have liked a little bit more backstory on Joan Crawford's upbringing, like to give a little bit more insight as to why she was like that, which might have been more interesting. Like I said, it seemed
depression.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the movie, the only criticism I have of it, and this isn't really a criticism, this doesn't really bother me that much, but is it that it's not really, like I said, it's not really a cohesive narrative. It's just like a series of vignettes, essentially. And sometimes there's like years in between, and they don't really like, because there's one really weird, like toward the end of the movie, like she marries the Pepsi CEO. And then there's a scene of them, like, setting up their apartment in New York, and he's like, hey, you're spending all my fucking money. Why don't you, like, knock it off a little bit? And so there's that. And then, like, literally the next scene, he's dead. Yeah. And she's, like, in black, and she's at the boardroom table. So he's in the movie, like, for 2 minutes. So they skip over a lot of stuff.
Her early development isn't going to be interesting.
It might be.
No, it's going to end up being the early development of the time, probably in her area. She's going to be a real attractive young girl in the Depression, which in what you're talking about, is basically a low level call girl. That's probably what she was. It's probably how she got ahead in Hollywood. That was the scene. So probably part of the reasons why it's always you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps and nothing's fair, but that's because of what she had to do when she was a kid to get ahead, to stand out amongst the competition, you know. Ass. Give it head and ass.
Well, and maybe she probably, like, resented it, so she was, like, taking it out on other people.
Of course.
No, Zach said, what I said about the movie looking ugly, he said, that is what I meant. Oh, it's just a very boring movie to look at.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I thought the subject matter...
No, it was just ugly looking.
I thought the subject matter was kind of boring, too, in a certain way. You know what I mean? Because it is basically a movie about gossip, about inside of a family.
Well, I didn't mind that so much. I actually kind of liked, I don't know, it's, I kind of liked that it went through so many eras of Hollywood, and you kind of got to follow this woman through her career, where toward the beginning, she was actually kind of still at the top of the world. When did they start, she adopted the kids in the 30s? 1935? Mm-hmm. Something like that. So they kind of start in the 30s, and then it goes all the way up to the 70s.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say I really did like all of Joan Crawford's, or Faye Dunaway's, like, costume changes in this. Like, all the different, like, hair and shit like that. Because she always looked, like, super, super extra. You know what I mean? Not just the eyebrows, but, man, she had... The hair was all glossy and perfect, and she had those big shoulder pads, and she had those, like, spindly, big, long, spindly heels all the time, and... She was all like, kind of fucking, I don't know. And it's like, it was just funny too, because it almost kind of got to the point. You know what? I discovered a new term today that is actually a sub-genre of horror, which is about like crazy old ladies, like that, like whatever happened to Baby Jane. There's a name for that. Hagsploitation, mm-hmm. or psychobiddy. I was reading an article about this, and I was like, psychobiddy? I never heard that term before, and I clicked on it, and it was under, like, you know, gender and horror or something like that, and they was like, yeah, this is, like, the crazy old lady subgenre of horror, otherwise known as hagsploitation.
Seth said she liked the book, even though apparently it's bullshit, and she loves how campy the movie is. I don't think it's bullshit. I don't think it's, like, I think it's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, it might be exaggerated, but I don't know.
The claims are not outrageous, so it probably was true.
Yeah, I mean, we've known people that acted like this, so it's not that crazy. I mean, I've seen people, like, have fucking meltdowns.
I've got people in my family that are like this.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And as I said, apparently a lot of people do, because there were a lot of comments, like, underneath some videos about this and said, this is absolutely not, like, funny, because they're like, my mom is like this, or my dad was like this, or I knew people like this, or something like that. Like, people do act like this. Yep. Maybe it's just funny to see on the screen, like I said, if you're not directly involved.
It's histrionic personality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder. Those, mixture of those three. I think it's called, you know, that's exactly what that is. Yep.
Leardo Dude says, I remember popping in the VHS tape just to watch the wire hanger scene as a kid. No wire. Yeah.
And my belief is that fucking Crawford's early development was that of a fucking call girl. That's what it, that's probably what she was.
I mean,
and that's where a lot of those actresses came from.
I kind of feel like this sort of came across in the movie as well, but I guess because, as I said, she had kind of fought her way up from nothing.
Yeah.
And she seemed very type A. And everybody that knew her said this, too. Yeah. They said she would get up at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning. Like I said, she was, like, jogging, doing these big, long fucking skin regimens. She was doing... Yeah. So she expected everyone else...
To be like that.
To be like that, too. And if they weren't, then it wasn't good enough. You know what I mean? And she was, like, absolutely gonna give you shit about that. Yeah. And, you know, fine, expect excellence, but you can't treat your kids like that. That is not gonna end well.
She would have done a lot better had she lived in this era, in the era where fucking... hormone therapies and fucking plastic surgery and implants is so much easier and cheaper to get. She probably would have held herself together like fucking Cher or Dolly Parton, which those two would probably turn out even better today if they were in their 50s, because the technology is so much better.
And I kind of feel like nobody picks on Dolly Parton or anybody like that really for being an old hag. Well, I mean, I guess... Not Dolly Parton particularly. Some people pick on, like, Madonna and stuff like that for doing... Because I kind of feel like once you get past a certain age, like, if you still look good, good, but it's like, don't try to be...
A teenager. Right.
Like, well, like act your age. You don't have to be, like, an old hag or nothing.
I saw some recent photos of Madonna, and she doesn't look bad. She looks okay for her age.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much what she looks like.
It's who she is.
It's how she's trying to come across. Yeah. Like, she's still trying to come across like she's...
Like an alpha sex symbol.
Like she's, like 25. And it's like, obviously that's not going to work out.
No.
But you see the same thing with male rock stars, too. You see this, you know, you see these kind of like old grandpa bands that are still out there on the road, like with tight pants on, like still thinking, and they still, still thinking they're going to get like, you know, panties thrown at them and stuff like that. And I'm just like... Your music's good.
Well, they might, but those girls are fucking 60 and 70. Yeah.
Big granny panties.
Yeah. So, it's just, yeah. And even Dolly held herself together pretty well. But she's fake as shit, but she was kind of, there's a certain amount of kink to that. I haven't seen her recently, but she looked good up into her late 60s. She still looked pretty good.
Camp Guy said, I saw a picture of Madonna today. She looked like Kenny Rogers after plastic surgery. What the fuck? I haven't seen her in a long time, so I can't speak to that. But
I saw some photos that came out. They were fucking mocking her. And she's 55, maybe?
I thought she was older than that.
Older than that, maybe 60. She looked pretty good for her age. It's just that it's just kind of inappropriate for her age. The photo shoot was inappropriate.
That's what I mean. I don't think it's so much what she looks, because obviously if you're in your 60s, you know, no one's going to look like they're 25. Right. But
she,
as long as you kind of wear normal, if you don't go around like, hey, I have this tiny little miniskirt.
Is and some of her shit, it's like she's transracial now. It's like she became a Chinese girl, I guess. I don't know. She's a blonde Chinese woman.
I don't know. I haven't seen her lately. So. Is it because they pulled all her skin back on her face?
Yeah, I think.
And stapled it on the back of her head.
Here, let me go look.
Camp Guy says she's 62 or 63.
She's 62 or 63.
Yeah, I was gonna say she's got to be like considerably older than me because I'm almost 50, she was older when I was a kid.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I'll show you the photographs that I was looking at. All right. They are kinda...
Yeah, Tyler said, I don't have a problem with how Madonna looks. I've just always found her narcissistic personality overbearing. Yeah, I think it's more how she comes across. Because other actresses and singers and stuff like that are older women don't get the same...
It's not a good photo of her.
That's, man, she's had some shit done with her lips, huh?
Yeah.
She's had all kind of shit injected in there. I mean, for a 60-something-year-old woman, she doesn't look awful, but, I mean, the plastic surgery is not great. Zach says Kate Blanchett and Beyonce are over 50, I think, and a lot of guys are still lusting over them. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what year that is, but she's looks it. That's photoshopped.
Well, yeah, that's obviously very photoshopped.
But she, you know, she can work with that.
No Need for Me Too says, Madonna tried too hard to be relevant, I feel. Yeah, that's what I mean. She has that try-hard energy, which I think a lot of people Yeah, that's what I mean.
She's
very
narcissistic.
Yeah, so I kind of feel like it's not even so much what she looks like. It's her attitude as well, I think, is part of it.
And it's there's something about the type of cosmetic surgery she got. She's trying to look like something that is not supported by her skeletal features. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She's trying to change the way she looks, not enhance beauty. She's trying to change into something else. So.
DJ Maniac says, Beyonce is not over 50. She's younger than me. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I have no idea how old Beyonce is. But yeah. Cate Blanchett is, I think, maybe older, maybe 50-ish. I don't know. Maybe. But Cate Blanchett still looks fantastic, I think. Yeah, Tyler said even when she was young, she was narcissistic. Yeah, and I think that's probably that's kind of the problem that a lot of people have. Like I said, it might have been Faye Dunaway's, or, you know, well, Faye Dunaway got a lot of shit for this movie, too, because a lot of people said she was difficult.
Yes, that's Dolly in her 60s.
Yeah.
All right. That was Dolly in her 60s, and who's going to argue with that? I don't know if you can pick that up.
No, it's all white.
It's all white.
I mean, you're going to fuck up the...
You'll fuck up the thing.
The lighting. Yeah. There.
There you go.
Yeah, DJ Maniac says, I doubt Beyonce is over 40, honestly. Not that I care. I think she's terrible. Yeah. Somebody said, I want to age like Lauren Bacall. Yeah, I mean, at least, like, have some grace about it, for Christ's sake. I'm not averse to, like, having plastic surgery or anything like that, but... One thing that I think a lot of... a mistake a lot of people make is that, like you said, actors that tend to look good as they get older get a little bit of plastic surgery, starting when they're fairly young and still good looking, and they just get little bitty tweaks every now and then. So it's not a big... If you wait until you get old and baggy and then try to do it all at once, that's going to look fucked up.
Right.
And the more you try to fix it, the more fucked up it's going to look.
Yeah, now that's her in her 70s.
Yeah.
You can see that, that's a lot of work.
I mean, she's obviously had a lot of work done, but it's still... You know,
for a woman in her 70s, she looks great.
Yeah.
You know.
So, you know.
But she's just had a lot of work, little by little, over time.
Zach says, Isabelle Huppert is hot as fuck, and she's in her 60s. Yeah, that's true. There was always something, like, really, really sexy about her. I always, like, really liked her a lot. Man, now I want to watch The Piano Teacher again. I haven't seen that in a long time. Yeah, Tyler says, ironically, most people who accept age look better than those who try to fight it.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, the ones that kind of win, get the tweaks, they invest the money, but they're not trying to look young, they're just trying to look better. And that's...
I think that's the big mistake. It's like, I got to, like, 55 and my face is, like, sliding off and I got to fix it.
You're right.
So, you know, hey, doc, put your foot on the back of my head and pull my fucking... It's not going to work. You know what I mean? It's not going to look good. You left it too long. Just do, like, a little bit.
Right.
Seth says, I plan to age as gracefully as Joan Rivers. I haven't seen... Is Joan Rivers still alive?
She died.
Oh, she did?
Cancer.
That's right. Yeah, I thought I'd heard that she died, like, fairly recently. All right, so, yeah, like I said, if you haven't seen Mommy Dearest, go watch that shit. Tell us, did you think it was a horror movie? Do you think it's an unintentional comedy? I think it's a combination of both of those things. But I unironically love the hell out of this movie. I wouldn't mind watching it again, to be honest with you. But, you know what I mean? I can see how it's a little much, like all the kids screaming and everything, because that actually did kind of bother me. Because it gets funny, but then it's, like, not funny anymore because it goes on too long, and you're like, oh, wait, this is kind of fucked up, and I shouldn't be laughing at it. But, you know, there's that. But, yeah, it's on Pluto if you want to watch it. Like I said, it's a commitment. It's pretty long. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. So, what movie do you want to watch tonight that we can talk about tomorrow? Does anybody have any suggestions?
No, I don't know.
You don't want to watch any more Hagsploitation?
No.
Like, whatever happened to Baby Jane? I wouldn't mind doing it eventually, because I actually do really
movie.
But, tonight maybe we'll find something a little more fun or lighthearted. Yeah. Like, I don't know, like a horror comedy or some fucked up 80s thing. Or I don't know. We'll find something to watch to talk about tomorrow. But yeah, thanks everybody for dropping by to talk about Mommy Dearest. Remember, no more wire hangers ever. And we will see you guys tomorrow. Bye.